Juice, written by Tim Winton, narrated by David Field.
We at Penguin Random House Australia
acknowledge that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples
are the traditional custodians
and the first storytellers of the lands on which we live and work.
We honour Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' continuous connection to country,
waters,
skies
and communities.
We celebrate Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander stories,
traditions and living cultures.
And we pay our respects to elders past and present.
To those who, from the beginning, saw blood in the machine, tasted death in the air, and cried, "Enough." I had this dream in which I swam with dolphins in open sea a transparent blue. Maybe you dreamt it too. Michael Frank's Yellow Jackets, The Dream. There was a world, or was it all a dream? Homer, the Iliad. So I drive until first light and only stop when the plane turns black and there's nothing between us and the horizon but clinkers and ash. I pull up, drop the side screen. The southern air is mercifully still this morning, and that's the only stroke of luck we've had in days. I know what wind does to an old fireground. In a gale, the ash can fill your lungs in minutes. I've seen comrades drowning on their feet, clambered over the windrows of their bodies. I wrap the scarf over my nose and mouth, hang the glasses from my neck, crack the door and step down, testing the surface as gently as I can, ankle deep, to the shins at worst. No sound out here but the whine of our rig's motors. "Stay there," I call. I know she's awake, but the child slumped in the corner of the cab does not move. I walk back gingerly to check the trailer. Everything is still cinched down as it should be. The maker, the water, pods and implements. Although the days of hard running have left my greens in disarray. The leafier edibles are windburnt, but overall the losses seem manageable. I tap the reservoir to fill my flask. Then with the glasses, I scan the western approaches. No plumes, no movement. We're clear. I try to swipe the dust from the films and panels, but it's pointless. In a minute or so, every generating surface will be furred with ash again. I just need the turbines to trickle in enough juice to get us across. Back at the cab, I thump my boot heels on the step and climb in. She hasn't moved, and why that's both a relief and vexation is beyond me. "We're okay," I tell her. "We'll make this." She gazes out across the scorched land. "This place," I say, "it was all trees once. I flew across it when I was young." She blinks, inscrutable. "It went on, trees beneath us for hours. The smell, you just wanted to eat the air." She maintains her silence. "Have you flown?" "Nothing." "I know you've been at sea. Just wondered if you've been up in a stat." She shifts and tilts her head against the side screen. "It's really something." She offers no sign of interest, sits back, leaves a smear of sun paste on the glass. "But just once," I say, "I would have liked to fly for the sake of it, not because I was on my way to somewhere horrible." The sun appears, molten, slumped at the edges, liquefying before us like a burning blimp, until it rises, breaks free of all comparisons to become its unmistakable self, something reassuring and terrible. "I talk too much," I declare, "and you never say a word. Once upon a time I never said enough, so I was told." She gives me nothing. "I know you hear me. You follow my language." She rubs at the glass and manages to spread more grease than she removes. "Listen," I say, "those men back there, we lost them. No one's coming for us. This morning we need to get across this ash. It won't be nice, but on the other side there'll be fresh country. We'll move and camp the way we did before, okay? Until we find ourselves a situation, they'll be somewhere. We'll be all right."